All right, shall we get started with the next module?
Yeah, let's do that.
Fantastic. All right, so let's pull up the course topics again. We've already covered the data landscape in part one. So in this one, we'll dive into the notion of relational databases. We'll talk about the various options, where their sweet spot is, maybe where
they're...
Yes.
One that everybody knows about, right?
Yeah. Right. The golden hammer, isn't it? The anti-pattern, right?
Yes,
the golden hammer anti-pattern, when all you have is a hammer, everything
looks like a nail,
right? Yeah. So, all right. So in this session, we will go over what a relational database is. We'll talk about why you might use one, maybe why you might choose not to. We'll talk about the options in Azure, and then we'll have two little demos. One will show how to provision with this thing called Azure SQL Database, which is our PaaS option. And then we'll show how to provision the same SQL Server in a virtual machine and see what options we have.
Cool. So, yep.
All right. What is a relational database? Ryan,
so
what is this thing?
It's amazing. I mean, you know, this is the database that we're all fairly familiar with. But to a lot of people, you know, to me even, while I was researching for the session, I went and dug around a little bit about, you know, what is a relational database? Why was it called relational database? You know, and the interesting thing for me is that these are some of the characteristics that kind of describe a relational database, right? It's set theory based. So you basically have sets and how you get the intersection and the joins of those sets. You know, it basically consists of two-dimensional tables, okay, where you have columns and rows. Columns are strongly typed, so you'll have a table that has X number of columns, and every column has a data type, right? And you'll have an ID with an int, and then you'll have, you know, some value with a string. And the important thing here is that schema for that table is rigid, okay? And the database enforces the data types that go into that table. So when you insert something, if it's the wrong data type, the database will reject it. Okay, so that's an important thing to remember. Tables have rows. So what you do is you define the schema for the table. This is what my columns look like. These are my data types. And then you start inserting data. And the data that you insert is a row. And you typically work with a row or sets of rows at a time. And you can basically do selections. So you will do, hey, give me some stuff. You can do a projection, which means that you change what the output looks like. So the output coming out doesn't have to be the exact of the table. You can have it be the result of two tables that you've joined or a part of a table or, you know, whatever. So those are your select statements. And then you can do some kind of a selection. So you'd have a where clause that would say where ID equals a value or where a date is bigger than a value or whatever. Okay. And then you have this notion of the Cartesian product, and that's where set theory really comes into kind of be, where you've got something, and then you want to join that in and get the result, where it matches, or get the excluding result on the left, or the excluding result on the right, or whatever the case may be. But that's really where set theory comes in. And where relational databases really work well is when you have lots of these kind of Cartesian products. So you take table 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you join them all together, and you find where's the intersection point where they all intersect, and those are the results that you then return. So that, in a nutshell, I guess, is a relational database.
Yeah, and these engines have been around for a while, right? SQL Server for almost decades.
Before I started. And I think maybe even before you started working. No, I don't think they've been around that long. But certainly before I've started, you know, we've had relational engines. David probably was around when the first relational engine was created.
Are you giving me grief about my age?
No, not at all. Definitely.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about why you might want to use a relational database. Optimal cases, right? As we were just talking about, these database engines have been around for a long time. These are road tested. I mean, they're handling enterprise scale workloads.
They're handling billions of transactions every second around the world.
And they're great, as you talked about, with rows and columns being strictly enforced to certain data types, the engine's doing a lot of work for us, right? They're ensuring that we're conforming to given structure. If we have a rigid schema, or we can have multiple schemas in different tables or different versions of the database, but the engine, we're really relying on the engine to enforce these rules.
And obviously, I mean, if the engine is enforcing these rules, then it works particularly well when you have data that is homogenous or data that conforms to that standard, right? If you try and take data that doesn't conform to that standard, you can force it into the table, but that's where the hammer comes in, right? So I'm square peg, round hole, you know, hit the square peg hard enough and I'll get the peg into the hole.
Sure.
But that's, you know, where it really shines is when the data already fits that hole and then you're just inserting it.
Right. So you already mentioned some of the things you can do with SQL, the query language itself. So very, very robust, very powerful query language. I mean, this is really the staple of SQL Server in these relational databases is how powerful the query language
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Again, very consistent data, very durable data, and a lot of options for mirroring and replication always on, we'll talk about.
And the very consistent and durable, you know, you want to make sure that when you're running a mission critical application, you know, if you want to make sure that that data is written, it's durable, it's been persisted, no questions asked, your data is in a consistent state no matter what, you know, the database that's really optimal at doing this as a relational database.
Right.
And that's why, you know, relational databases back millions of enterprise applications today, right? Because of this very consistent, very durable, you know, nature of the way they treat data.
Yeah. And lastly, I think a lot of people depend on the transactionality of a SQL engine. The fact that you can have commits across tables and rollbacks, and you know that when that commit is done, if you're writing a customer and the related orders, you can do that right across multiple tables, wrap them in a transaction, and you have confidence that that transaction either succeeds or fails as a unit.
Yeah, and absolutely. And you can even do, you know, David, you mentioned transactions across tables. I mean, some of the relational engines allow you to do transactions across servers, you know, so
right.
In SQL Server, I can do a distributed transaction that spans multiple servers and multiple tables, you know, and that's where these guys really, really shine is in this kind of ability to do transactions across these distributed entities.
Sure. So those are all great reasons to use SQL. And I should also mention one other that we don't have. It's familiarity.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not only has it been around for years, but so many people learn about SQL Server as their first database engine. They learn about it in school. They learn about it on the job. So
it's still taught at school. You know, you could walk into the library in any of the technical reference sections or your local bookstore or whatever, and you will walk up. And if you go to a data section, you know, you'll still get relational database kind of reference materials. If you search online, you will find, you know, endless forums and endless help, and the documentation is brilliant. And it's just because it's been around so long, everybody knows this, it's robust.
Right.
It's there. Yeah.
Of course, there's some less optimal cases.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, absolutely. I mean, I think if relational databases were optimal for every kind of workload, you know, you and I wouldn't be sitting here today talking about the other kinds of databases. Because if relational databases were great at doing everything, nobody would have invented a different kind of database.
Yeah.
You know? So there's clearly some areas where relational databases are not brilliant.
Right, so we have scaling.
Yep.
Right?
So what do you mean by scaling here?
Typically we're...
Are you telling me that I can't have a SQL server that scales really large, or an Oracle that a big Oracle server?
Oh, we could scale. Have you seen our latest 440-some-odd gig 32-core servers?
Yeah.
I think we can scale, but again, we're usually scaling up.
Okay.
Right? That's the typical model in SQL Server. And even though we have environments where we have multiple SQL servers working together in a cluster, typically there's replication or multiple masters in that environment, we're not typically scaling out.
Okay.
Right?
So scaling up is kind of taking one box that you've got and making it bigger, right? And adding more CPU, adding more memory, you know, getting a bigger, gruntier kind of box. What's scaling out? Is it that's where you take kind of the same kind of thing, but you just add lots of them. So it's smaller machines, but you just keep adding hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them if you want to.
Sure, and then with a scale out model, you're usually dividing up your data across those servers.
So you're partitioning your data across
those. Sometimes partitioning,
nodes.
Right.
Okay. So. You know, and I guess the thing with scaling up, while that works really nicely, is that there is that diminishing return on your investment, right? So as you kind of keep getting to the higher end of the server, you're spending a lot of money to kind of keep scaling this guy up, and you're getting less and less return. Sure. And there's going to become a point, like on Azure, you know, that there is a limit, an upper limit to how big that virtual machine is. You can't get a bigger virtual machine than that. Right, so you know, if your relational database has kind of got to that point, well, now what do you do? You know?
Right.
Okay.
So you mentioned the enforcement of data. We talked about this, right? How it's you conforming data. Well, what about if your schema is flexible? Right. What about if you have a product database? So every product has different attributes. Maybe a book has number of pages and an author. Maybe a fitness band has the features that it supports, with heart rate and all that.
So I could probably design a really wide table, and you know, that contains every possible field I could think of, and I could make it nullable. And but then I've got rows that have got null, and
maybe a property table or something.
Or you can create this kind of weird, flexible key value kind of table that stores dynamic property. But you know, then you're creating this like really complicated database.
Yep.
Okay.
So, and the other thing is, we mentioned, we're calling it an impedance mismatch, but we're developers at heart. So we tend to think in terms of objects, and then we write code. And sometimes the code that we write doesn't directly map to a table.
I sit and do my domain model, and my domain model design designs my domain entities, right? Now, those domain entities, most of the time, don't actually map what my database looks like, because my database has been structured and designed by my DBA for optimal kind of performance and optimal reads and writes. But my domain model has been built by the application designing what objects and entities it's going to use in the domain model. And there's this mismatch between the application's objects and the database's kind of schema. And that's what we mean by this impedance mismatch.
Right.
Right. And you typically need some ORM tool and a mapper tool to take your application's object and map it into your database object or database schema, mm-hmm. or take your database schema and then, you know, reverse engineer that back into an object.
And not that those don't exist, right? We have Entity Framework, and we have a lot of open source frameworks that are doing exactly that.
But how many developers love using those things? I mean,
Are you asking this on Twitter?
Okay. No, that's not the question, just for the record. That's not the question for the giveaway. We'll do that at the end of the module.
Okay.
So I think we've talked a little bit about it. For people that aren't familiar with SQL, let's take a look at SQL, you know, and take a look at kind of playing with SQL. And this is what a typical kind of, you know, query in SQL can look like. You know, you've got, like I said, you've got your columns, you've got your rows. Those tables have relationships to other tables. And one of the best things about SQL is this kind of, and when we say SQL, I'm not meaning SQL Server here, I'm meaning structured query language. And all relational databases use some flavor, hopefully ANSI SQL, but they use some flavor of structured query language. And structured query language says basically, get me some things, okay, from somewhere, join on a few other things if I need to with their relationship, where some condition is true, and then I can do other things like order by, group by, and I can do calculations.
Right, so in this case, I guess we're looking at these various fields that we're grabbing. Now, notice they're coming from multiple tables.
Yep.
So we're prefacing with we have a P, a C, A, so we
and that's
have,
how I'm doing my projection, right?
Right, we have a person table, a contact details table, address, and we're bringing all that data together.
Yep. So, and then you can see I'm doing, you know, an inner join on this one. So that's the kind of set where all records exist, right? So that intersection of all three tables together, I want that. If I wanted a person that didn't have contact details, well, I could change the inner join, you know, to a left outer join, and then it would give me, one of the other, either contact details that have no person or person that has no contact details. But this one means that I'm only going to get records back where person has contact details and has an address.
Right.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. So that's the simple kind of nature of SQL. Let's take a look at some of those options that we can do in Azure.
Cool. So again, as Ryan talked about earlier, we broke things down into more of a service-oriented set of options and then infrastructure-oriented, meaning you would set things up in a virtual machine. So from a service side, we have the Azure SQL database. And we'll see that's an example of that.
That service has been around, one of the first services on Azure. It's been around for ages. It's huge, people love it, and it's gone through a number of iterations over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. which has kind of brought it to where it is today. So we'll take a look at some of those.
Now, it's interesting, you said brought it to where it is today. Actually, what, a week ago, I think we
just
released,
we
upgraded to the V12 version. And we'll talk a little bit about that when we demo it. But this database, totally as a service, you push a button, spin up the database.
Amazing. Yeah.
You get the vast majority of features that are available in SQL Server, but you don't manage any of the infrastructure. And you also get to choose the type of scale you want.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what amazes me about Azure SQL Database still today is that, you know, from you can start at really kind of dollars and or like cent, you know, dollars, small dollars per month for the cost of a cup of coffee. You know, you can get a highly available, SQL database, which is just phenomenal. I mean, imagine how much it will cost you to set up your own on-premises kind of SQL environment that's highly available and replicated and all that kind of stuff. You'll never do it for a price of a cup of coffee a month. Right. I mean, it's just nuts. Yeah.
So. We also have some partners that have been integrating, right? So we have MySQL.
So the Azure ecosystem is growing really big with all the partners that are contributing kind of services, which is exciting.
Right, so you could spin up a MySQL database and somebody else is managing it for you.
Right.
Now, if you're okay with managing things on your own and working with virtual machines, we have several options that we facilitate. SQL Server on a virtual machine. You can spin up anything from a standard to enterprise edition to an always-on cluster.
And I think I was speaking to someone on the VM team just the other day, and they were saying SQL Server on a VM is probably the single biggest payload that they have on virtual machines.
Yep.
So definitely there are lots of people out there that are running SQL Server on a VM and want the full power of SQL.
Sure. Yeah. Now, we also offer Oracle Database as one of the options in the gallery.
How about that?
Yeah, MySQL, Postgres, really anything that you can run in a Windows or Linux virtual machine, as long as you can install it and run it, you should be okay to go. You can attach storage up to, 32 terabytes?
32 terabytes now, yeah.
Yeah, and so we have some pre-built images that take care of SQL Server and Oracle and MySQL. If you want to bring your own database server, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. So, yeah, let's jump into a demo and let's take a look at a demo quickly of provisioning and using a SQL Azure database.
Sure.
Or Azure SQL database, as it's correctly called. So here I am in the preview Azure portal. Okay, there are two Azure portals at the moment. There's the manage.windowsazure.com, which is the current kind of production portal. But slowly but surely, more and more services are moving over to the new portal. So I'm going to look in the new portal today. So if I go to add a new SQL database, if I scroll down, there it is there in SQL database. But because they refresh this kind of featured gallery every now and then, if it's not there, I can always go to everything. I can then pick data and analytics. And in here will be SQL database, right? So I pick SQL database over here, and I choose create. And I can give it a name. So we can call this Polyglot MVA Demo, okay? That's the name of my SQL database. Then I get this notion of a server, but it's a logical server, okay? So I'm just gonna let it create a new one. I'm gonna pick, here I can pick, is this a blank database? Is it a pre-canned sample? So I can do pre-canned samples, and then I can pick which pre-canned sample I wanna do, AdventureWorks, because you know you can't have a database without AdventureWorks. or I can actually restore from a backup. I'm just going to pick a blank database. I can pick my pricing tier. There's a whole bunch of different pricing tiers from basic, which is really, really small, to standard, to premium. Premium, I can go up to 500 gig. You know, so I'm just going to pick a standard one for now. You can set your collation. You can pick a resource group. You can choose what subscription you want to put it on, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And once I've done all of that, I would just hit create. So one thing I need to do is create a new server, and I need to give it a server admin. So I probably shouldn't call my server admin SA and password SA. So what I'll do here is go polyglot admin, and then give it some cool kind of password. So password is probably not a good password. So we'll do a complex password. Let's hope I remember this later. And then once I've done all of that, I would hit create, and it would actually create a database for me. So I'm not going to go through that today. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to go browse to SQL databases. And here is a list of the SQL databases that I've previously provisioned. And the one that I'm going to take a look at quickly is the shopping site one. And we'll see this one in action later. But once I've got this open, there's a bunch of things I can do with it. And I can set my metrics. I'm not really going to go too much into the Azure portal itself at the moment. But this is where you'd go, you'd configure it, and you'd do a whole lot of things to it. What I want to show you, though, is if I go into Visual Studio, and I go into Server Explorer, I have got the data connection already set up. What is our password for the server?
Oh.
I'm just getting David to type in the password. He doesn't trust me with credentials. So I'm getting him to type in the password.
Let's see.
So there we'll connect, all right? And now just quickly, I can go and have a look. And this looks like a normal SQL server. It's got some tables, it's got some views, stored procedures. I can go in, you know, and I can kind of create a table quickly. So let's go and create a table just to show you what that experience looks like. I can create a table over here. I'm going to call it person. I'm going to give a person's going to have an ID, okay, because you need some kind of a identifier. And then I'm going to go do something like this. And I'm going to call that. And then this is how I'm defining my schema. So you can see here I'm creating my table. I say it's an ID with an int, first name with an n varchar, you know, last name with an n varchar. And this is how you would kind of go along and you would define your table, right? So that's fine. Let's just kind of do that. And I want to save this table. Yep. So you would kind of go in here and you would do all of that stuff. Everybody would be happy. That would all work. And you would design out your table. Once you've designed out your table, you could then say, you know, once you've got your table in here, you could actually then join it up. So I could create a person table, and I could create a friends table, and I can put, you know, David in there, I can put Ryan in there, I can put Mary Jo, I can put Bob, I can put whoever in the person table. And then I could say, you know, Ryan is friends with David, David is friends with Ryan, you know, David's friends with Mary Jo, Ryan's not friends, so we wouldn't put a record in there. You know, so that's how you would go about constructing up your table.
Right.
And that's as simple as it is. And once that's there, you connect to it and use it like a SQL server. You know, it's just SQL and nothing different. So quick little demo of SQL database. So
fantastic.
Back to you.
Yeah, and I thought it was really good that you showed the different tiers that you could use with SQL database, right? I think it was, what, $5 a month or something?
From $5 a month to
get you started.
Thousands.
Right, but once you're into that, you have geo-replication, and you have half
backup
a terabyte,
restore,
and backup restore. I think on Azure.com, we have an entire documentation site that talks about all the differences.
Yeah. And I mean, now with V12 that was launched last week, we've got some really cool, new, exciting features that kind of were added to V12 that closed that gap between box product SQL and SQL database. Yeah. You know, that gap's getting smaller and smaller.
But if you do need box product, let me show you a quick demo of what you'd go through.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
On Azure. So we get rid of our slides here, and we're back to the portal. So if we wanted to create a SQL Server now in a virtual machine, we have a few options. One is we could spin up. If we take a look at what we have here, we could spin up our own Windows server.
Yep.
Install
whatever
SQL Server. Right.
So if I wanted SQL Server version 7 or whatever, for whatever reason.
Some old version.
Yeah.
That's when you were just...
6, I think I started.
Yeah. You were an old adult.
I was born.
Yeah. if it's a, I don't know, some variant that requires Linux, you could spin up these raw virtual machines. But we've also created some pre-built templates.
Now, this is awesome.
Right, so if I click and I just wanted to build an always-on cluster,
because I've built one of these, you know, when I'm feeling rather, you know, kind of down in life, I've built one of these because this cheers me up often, right? building SQL servers on VMs and then setting up always on that's the fun job that I love to do. But for people who don't want to kind of go through that and just want to set one up really quickly, look how quick and easy this is.
Right, we would set up our virtual network. Now, I've already set up a virtual network, but once you choose your region, and again, we can deploy this pretty much anywhere in the world. We have regions everywhere.
You, and it just deploys multiple VMs, SQL on all of them. The always-on cluster is always is configured. It's up and it's running.
Right.
It's just amazing.
Right, and then
click of a button.
It builds, I guess, file groups and spins it up. But even if that, let's say you didn't want to go to the always-on cluster and you just wanted to just build out a plain SQL server, here are our options for what we can do in Azure. And if we scroll down a bit, we have these various virtual machines. Mm-hmm. And
there's a virtual machine with
right. Again, we have several options for SQL Server. These are different versions of Enterprise that are optimized for maybe transactional or OLAP for analysis.
You've got Data Center Edition in there.
Yep, there's Standard Edition, right.
That's amazing.
And once you're done spinning that up, it's just like any other
you can remote
virtual machine
to it.
Yeah, which is what I'm in right now.
Okay.
So this is a SQL Server I spun up just right before we went on air. And you can see all the roles are running. This is an actual SQL Server box. At this point, we would, through RDP, configure our SQL Server or do remote administration, and we're off and running.
You can set up your firewall the way you want to set it up, and
yep.
You can set up whatever you want, right?
Yeah, so it's your option.
And if you had an AD running, you could kind of domain join this machine, and you could do domain join credentials and all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So this is what you would normally do.
And what I was mentioning also was the fact that you get to define your network. So we could put this all in a virtual network. We don't even need to expose this SQL Server virtual machine to the outside world.
So I could then have a website that was part of that virtual network that talked to the database, but only that website could talk to the database, or
right.
Things inside that virtual network.
Exactly.
So yeah, so I guess, you know, that's the difference between Azure SQL Database and running SQL Server on a VM, is that Azure SQL Database gets you up and running really, really quickly. And it's a service, and you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. But when you want that extra control and that extra kind of configurability, that's when you want to spin up a VM with SQL on it, and then you can kind of do whatever you would do normally as if the server was running next door to you.
Right. So those are our demos. And why don't we do a quick summary of what we've went over in this session?
Sure.
So we learned what a relational database is. We went over the details, some of the math behind it, the calculus behind it.
Yeah.
And we talked about some optimal cases.
Yeah, so, you know, why and why not? You know, that's a very hard kind of, you know, why we should not use. But like you said, I think it's why what is a relational database optimal for, and what is it kind of not so optimal for?
Yep. We talked about some options in Azure. So we had the platform as a service option with SQL Database. You chose a database, spun it up for us. We have virtual machine options, so we have pre-built images, or you could just spin up your own VM and away you go.
So relational on Azure is just easy, right?
Yep.
And that's what we've been doing since Azure has kind of been around, is relational databases on Azure. It's amazing.
Yep. Yeah, fantastic.
So that's that module. You know, I think that's a wrap for that module. We'll take a short break. We'll be back after the break. And so enjoy your break and see you again later.